We're back and ready to go. Shane hilariously just said, do you want another introduction? And I'm like, nothing I've added to the resume in the last 5 seconds. Probably the best way to describe what I do is that I'm a trial lawyer masquerading as an academic. And so I bring kind of a meshing of the pedagogy behind how to do this with real life experience. And so Shane and Quentin asked that I talk to you about deposing for the defense. I'll give you a little secret. Some of this is not that different when you're deposing for the plaintiff, but it's still sort of nice to go back to and think about what are the steps that I can build in when I am taking a deposition and I'm representing a party who's being sued. One of the first things you have to get really clear on is why are you taking this deposition? We don't wander into every deposition approaching it the same way. Sometimes it's for discovery purposes only. This is somebody and you need to figure out every piece of information in their brain and get them committed on it. Sometimes you are taking a trial deposition. Now, we don't actually notice it as a trial deposition per se, but you have reason to believe that this witness may be unavailable. You want to be sure that you've got the testimony perpetuated, and your focus when you are taking a deposition for trial is very different. And sometimes it's hybrid. Trey did a really good job of showing you how those clips from the deposition can be used for impeachment at trial. And so often the answer is a little bit of both. But there are other things to think about. Is this also a defensive deposition where you're trying to guard against surprise? You don't want any ugly surprises to come out later, and so you're really being cautious about that. Or is it offensively, where you are trying to gain admissions? And we'll talk a little bit about how those are different. Now, there are differing views on whether you should use a deposition to seek admissions. Mark Lanier, who you saw in the opening statement, sort of famously does not take admission-seeking depositions. He wants every fact, every opinion if it's an expert, and just goes through and she says, anything else, anything else, anything else. His view is he doesn't want to divulge trial strategy. He wants it to be an ugly surprise when he gets to trial, puts up that ABC, and they have no idea where they're coming from. Admissions, though, can produce other admissions once they concede one thing that may open up more fertile ground. It also can direct and really be guided by what is your client's objective in the case? I mean, if you don't, fairly early on, you ought to be sitting down with your client saying, what does a win look like for you? Because for a lot of clients, especially on the defense side, winning at trial is their worst case scenario. They don't want to go through trial. They don't want the attendant publicity, time away from the business, unpredictability, expense, etc. And so if the win in this case is to resolve it early, admission-seeking depositions can be a powerful way to do that. So depending on the reason, the purpose, the way you're taking the deposition, you'll want to think about how that impacts the structure. One of the things Trey said was, you spend 75% of the deposition warming them up and 25% at the end getting admissions. And Paul and I both looked at each other and went, because that is what is expected. Right? A lot of witnesses come in prepared to be sort of lulled into the process. They think you're going to go through their background. They're going to be asked, what did you review? What do you know? And so if the very first question is one of those cut through the jugular questions, they are not prepared. And once a witness is off kilter, uncomfortable, they're far more likely to keep giving you admissions. So you want to think about this. Now, particularly in discovery depositions, there's real benefit to going chronologically because you're less likely to miss things.